Is this the night I've waited oh so long for? Is this my dream come true?
Welcome to an edition of the Neon Jazz Interview Series with the very accomplished New York City-based jazz singer Karin Allison. She was born in Great Bend, Kansas, raised in Omaha, Nebraska, and spent some quality time in Kansas City back in the 1990s while her career took off. Over an impressive music career and performances, along with Grammy nominations, she has some very interesting stories about her life and what's in store down the road. Dig it, my friends.
How are you doing?
I'm wonderful. How are you?
I am fine, thanks.
Thank you for taking a little time out to talk with me. I
sure.
appreciate it. Let me go ahead and start off here and ask you, what has been going on these days with you?
What has been going on these days with me? I'm kind of always in the middle of the creative process and on the road here and there, although right now it's more calm for me, which is great because last year was full of a lot of travel. And I'm getting ready to record again. It's my hope, and writing material, writing new songs, and learning other people's songs, and
right on.
All kinds of stuff.
Well, let me kind of go back to the beginning of your life here in Great Bend, Kansas. What was it like to grow up there? What really fostered this love of music that you have?
Well, I didn't grow up in Great Bend. I was born in Great Bend, and my family moved when I was almost a year old, so I really don't remember Great Bend.
Okay.
But I grew up in Kansas City and in Omaha. My first musical beginnings were with my mom and my grandparents, who were all musicians. My mom is a beautiful pianist, still is, classical. But my family, you know, was open to other types of music, too. And I studied a lot of classical piano, and I thought that was what I was going to do for a living or for a career or for a life. And then I started to listen to, when I started to listen to the radio as a kid, singer-songwriter stuff. So I loved singing along with Carly Simon, Carole King, Joni Mitchell, and I loved R&B stuff too. So that's what kind of started me off in the pop world, the non-classical world.
Now, what was the time frame for Kansas City and Omaha? How much time did you spend in Kansas City and how much in Omaha?
We moved, as I said, from Great Bend when I was about a year old. So I would say I was in Kansas City for about 6 years, and then, or 5 or 6 years, and then we moved to Omaha, and I, all the way up through high school in Omaha. And then I moved to the Bay Area with my mom and actually graduated from Oakland, California, where I got into some musicals and was the lead in several musicals. So that turned me on to a whole different type of music. And I got into drama a bit and summer repertory theater in California. And then I moved back to Omaha and went to college at UNO, University of Nebraska at Omaha, and got my Bachelor of Music in Piano Performance, so I was back to classical music, but still was involved in all kinds of different bands while I was in college, an all-girls rock and roll band, I was in wedding bands, I was in funk bands, all kinds of stuff.
So you bounced all over the musical map. You were in the band Tomboy, and you were, as you've said, you were in a lot of different genres. Why was it jazz that ultimately became your calling?
I think when I first got turned on to people like Thelonious Monk, Bill Evans, Nancy Wilson, Ella Fitzgerald, Carmen McRae, I mean, the list goes on and on, but those are the first people, also Dinah Washington. I loved the way the time and the feel was so wonderful, and they were telling stories, and you could hear somebody do this, you know, five different people do the same tune, and it was a very different reading. I love the improvisational aspect of it, the way that you could, it was very organic, and it was different all the time.
Was there one jazz musician, singer, that really, you listened to their album, and it just hit you and said, this is something that is just blowing me down, this is something that I may want to do later on in life?
Yeah, I would say that Nancy Wilson and Cannonball Adderley's record that they did together was really pivotal for me, because I loved hearing her sing Save Your Love for Me and Never Will I Marry, all that. And I loved the fact that it was also quite, it wasn't just a singer's album that jazzers were the side men on or side people on. It seemed to be a real marriage of the a vocalist and an instrumentalist. And whether they meant it to be that way or not, I don't know. But, of course, Cannonball was such a force.
Yeah.
She was and is, too. So it just seemed like a really beautiful storytelling, but really great improvisation as well on that CD, on that record.
Absolutely. So what made you come back to Kansas City in 1990?
I graduated from college in Omaha, and I moved to Minneapolis. Got involved in the jazz scene there because my mom and my sister were there, so I kind of moved where I thought I could make a go of things. And then finally, my uncle, Ron Schoonover, had a club in Kansas City called the Phoenix in downtown Kansas City.
Yeah.
And I think it was my dad and my grandfather who said, listen to your niece, you know, she can play a little and sing a little. So I went down there, and he was very sweet and listened to me. And I ended up subbing for Tim Whitmer on his early gigs sometimes, and then it just went from there, and I ended up moving from Minneapolis to Kansas City full-time and just loved the scene, met some wonderful players whom I still work with to this day. Started to record in Kansas City. I met Bill McLaughlin in Kansas City, the conductor of the Kansas City Symphony. I'm still with him as of today. And Kansas City has such a soulful, welcoming vibe and such talented players.
So when you came back and everything kind of started going on the upswing for you, was it a perfect storm? What really kind of started falling into place for a lot of momentum to start gaining for you?
Well, I think I just mentioned them. The musicians that I met, people like Danny Embry, Bob Bowman, Rod Fleeman, Todd Strait, Paul Smith. But before that, even Russ Long, so many great, Gary Civils, Milt Abel, Tommy Ruskin, so many players were, it was a happening scene. I think that several of us moved there and got the scene kind of going. Every scene goes through ebbs and flows, and I think that was a real beginning of a real, at least 10-year-long flow as far as I'm concerned. And the clubs were happening, and, you know, we could be working 2 to 3 gigs a day and a night if we wanted to. So that, you know, that tends to help you learn a lot of songs for a lot of different reasons, requests, you know. You put all of that in your arsenal and play in all different kinds of circumstances. So I think those are some of the highlights for me in my Kansas City days.
What's the greatest thing about Kansas City?
I think I mentioned that too. The soulful, welcoming qualities, the talented folks there. It's just a soulful city.
Right on. Was it a shock for you going from Kansas City to New York? Was there a big kind of culture shock and adjustment that you had to make?
No, not really, because I had traveled here a lot, and by then I had traveled a lot on the planet. So, I mean, in some ways, yes. In some ways, I still feel like a tourist when I'm, you know, I've been here for 15 years and love it very much. But in some ways, I still feel like a tourist. You know, I'll always be a prairie girl, probably, and that's okay with me. So, but I feel like more of a citizen of the whole universe, really. So
yeah.
I like Manhattan a lot. I like this city, what it has to offer. You can be as private as you want or as public as you want. I think, was it E.B. White who said something like that?
Yeah.
And which is great, and it has so much to offer, of course. But I love, there are so many other places I love as well.
From 92 to today, you've been regular with recordings. Is there a time during that period that you think was most prolific for you to create? that things were happening?
I think it's just been kind of constant. Yeah. I feel it's been, it takes a lot of self-determination. You don't wait for, you can't really just sit around and wait for things to happen, inspirations to happen or jobs to happen. So it's, I feel like I'm pretty driven, and it takes that to be in this business. I'm not saying you always feel successful or whatever. I think real artists are always questioning their place and their themselves, you know. So it's a constant challenge to do that. But I think now is a good time. You know, and the other times have been good too, but it's always challenging.
Yeah. So if you could take yourself back to the first time you really performed in front of a crowd, a large crowd, and then think about it today, is there a way that you approach or go into a gig today versus in the beginning? Do you still feel nervous? How do you feel today versus your first gig?
Mm-hmm. That's a great question. Let me see. Yes, of course I'm still a little nervous every time I get on stage. I think that's kind of a positive thing because there's this adrenaline and excitement that happens, and you really, you know, your desire is to do well and to communicate with the audience and your musicians. How do I do it differently? I don't know if I do it differently. I hope, you know, I mean, obviously more experience you have, you hopefully that shows. But,
yeah.
You know, sometimes it always feels like the first time.
Yeah.
And there's so many different situations. I mean, for example, just a few weeks ago I played a house party in Massachusetts, and so there were 50 people there, and we were doing French and Brazilian material, as a matter of fact. So that's a very different thing than playing to an outdoor festival. But I think that it really kind of, for me, comes down to always trying to make it feel like an intimate thing.
Yeah.
Like you're being, you know, like it's small, even though it's big.
Yeah. Who would you say are your music or jazz heroes?
Yeah, I mentioned some of them. I love Carmen McRae so much. I think her stuff holds so many different aspects that I admire. Humor, intelligence, her extreme intelligence when she sings, but real heart and soul, real musician. I love Nancy King. She's still out there doing her thing. I love people like John Hendricks. I sure admire what he does. So many people, instrumentalists too, obviously. The players I work with, I admire so much. Bruce Barth, great pianist. Rod Fleeman, great guitarist and musician. So many people.
Yeah.
And it's not just jazzers, of course, but it's a lot of different genres that I love and admire.
And speaking of genres and jazz, is there anybody out there that you would love to play with and you haven't had a chance to yet?
Oh, lots.
Like, who would be on the top of the list?
Yeah, well, let's see. Oh, man. Well, let's just fantasize. This probably way, way beyond it, but wouldn't it be great to sing with Joni Mitchell someday?
Yeah.
Wouldn't it be great to sing with and play with Pat Metheny someday? Wouldn't it be great to sing and play with Herbie Hancock or Kenny Barron or and some of these things are within reach. You know, I have hopes.
So who has taught you the most about music?
I would say my mom. I would say Bill McLaughlin has taught me a lot just by how he himself views music. It's not like he sits down and gives me lessons or anything, but the players I work with teach me all the time when I'm working with them.
Yeah. So what's next for you? I know you said you're writing and you're recording. Is there anything else that's on the horizon for you?
No, as far as career-wise, those are what I'm striving toward and looking forward to, writing more and getting it out there, actually, and recording other things, too, but as well as originals, which has yet to be put out there, but it's going to be. So those are the things.
Right on. What's the nicest thing a fan has ever said to you?
That who has said to me?
That a fan has said to you?
Oh, that a fan. I thought you said Santa.
Oh, yeah. That'd be a good one.
Yeah. that a fan has ever said to me. And that means a lot because that's why we're there, really. I mean, we're there for ourselves, too, but to make a living and for our own thing. But to relate and to is really a big thing. So I would say fans say, you know, you really got, I've had people come up to me and say, you really got me through a hard time in my life.
Yeah.
I use your recordings and I use your live performances have really, I really feel better than when I came in. And that's a lot.
Right on. Karin, that's all I have. I really appreciate you taking a little time out.
Thank you, Joe. I appreciate your taking time, too.
And thank you again, and continued success.
Right. Thank you so much, Joe, and to you as well.
Thanks for listening and tuning in to yet another Neon Jazz interview, where we give you a bit of insight into the finest players in New York, Kansas City, and spots all over America, giving fans all that jazz. And thanks to Karin for her time and insights into her career. If you want to hear more interviews, you can always go to Famous Interviews with Joe Domino on the iTunes Store, or for all things Neon Jazz, go to theneonjazz.blogspot.com. Until next time, enjoy the music, my friends.
Neon Jazz.